Engineering Advisory Board, Thursday, March 3rd. Before I do introductions, I do want to note that the DEEB meeting is being recorded and the audio will be posted to the DEEB meeting website. A couple of DEEB members, Dan Weisner, had contacted me that he will not be here today. Terry Wallum is also not supposed to be here today. He's on vacation. And then Nick Flagg will also not be here today. And Nick had wanted me to note, somehow he's been dropped off of the distribution list, so we should stick him back on. With that, Jamie Housley, Jordan Ramos, Chair of Development Engineering Advisory Board this month, and I'll go around and pick the DEEB members first. Mr. Riston.
Jeff Riston, Kingston Homes.
Mr. Galimo.
Eric Galimo, SGA Engineering.
Mr. Gunther.
Andrew Gunther, PLS Engineering.
Mike.
Mike Odrin, Olson Engineering.
Sherry.
Sherry Jones, Southwest Washington Contractors Association.
Seth.
Seth Halling with AKS Engineering.
And is that all the DEEB members I'm seeing right now? That will move to staff. Brent?
Brent Davis, Community Development.
Ted? Ted?
Sorry, Ted Benegas, Community Development.
Shannon?
Shannon Ashoff, Development Engineering.
Diana?
Diana Nutt, Development Engineering.
Ali?
Ali Safari, Development Engineering.
Jennifer?
Jennifer Reynolds, Development Engineering.
Rod?
Rod Swanson, Clark County Public Works.
Chris?
Chris Walther, Taylor Morrison Homes.
Ezra, welcome, Ezra.
Hi, Jamie. Ezra Hammer, also with Taylor Morrison Homes.
April?
April Firth, Community Development.
Emily?
Emily Flint, Permit Center Manager, Clark County.
Brandy?
Brandy McElrath, Quail Homes.
And am I missing anybody? Anybody else out there? Okay, I think we did that. For the first item is a review and adopt the minutes. Mr. Odrin, your courtesy. you're on mute, bud.
Thanks, appreciate it, as always. I do have one correction to be made. Under the 2021 annual report work plan update, it says Mike Odrin to present to County Council. I don't remember volunteering for that.
I believe
that's either going to be Dan.
It'll be Dan and I.
It'll be Dan and Jamie. Yeah, so that would need to be updated. Looks like they picked up the change from the previous month's minutes in that correction. And except for that correction, I would move for approval.
Okay.
It's been moved for approval, seconded by Mr. Riston. Any other additions, changes?
I do see that Terry Wallum's name is misspelled in a couple of locations as well.
Okay, and that's T-E-R-R-Y-W-O-L-L-I.
His last name is spelled incorrectly.
Okay, W-O-L-L-A-M. We'll get that corrected as well. Okay, all those DEEB members in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, abstentions, okay. Upcoming events, Brent.
Okay, there's council hearings March 8th and 15th and April 5th, and the only upcoming work session is actually your work session with the council on the 30th, 9 a.m. That's not on the calendar yet. We had a a miscommunication about the paperwork, and that's in the process of being corrected. So it should be showing up on the calendar in the next day or two. Planning Commission is also does not have anything on the agenda for March. So not much there. And in terms of the advertisement for Terry's position on the board, we did not get any applications, including one from Terry. So we are extending that so that, and I'll make sure and forward that directly to Terry so he doesn't miss it. So hopefully we'll have that filled before the next meeting.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Brent. I know he's been busy doing college tours with one of his children. So,
Justin Wood with CCAR now would be a good choice.
Yeah. And one other comment regarding that would be Mr. Russo's departure from DEEB. Mm-hmm. And that how to fill that. And I would just like to throw out there that we were discussing internally at my firm that it might be good to solicit or see if there is an architect available, if in fact Mr. Russo's position would allow for that. If not, we might want to keep that in mind as other positions come available.
What position did he have? Does anyone know off the top of their head?
I don't know off the top of my head. Let me check the county's website real quick because I think it yeah. gives it there.
An architect is a good idea.
And the reason why is that we really don't have anybody on the board that can talk about, building permit issues, structural review issues, things of that nature. The first person that comes to my mind in that regard would be Ryan Wilson, if he would be so inclined. I know that he's just as busy as the rest of us, but that doesn't mean that would be the only person that could be considered.
No.
Don was commercial development, and I believe that was correct.
That we would need to fill his position with a similar person then.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can check the bylaws.
Initially I thought that position was created to, and then we created a separate position for SWATCA. So I think that was like the predecessor to that, if my memory serves me.
Yeah, Jamie, that was going to be my question is, because I have a couple people in mind if we're really looking on the commercial side, that might be a good fit. But are we really looking for an architect? Any guidance on who we're looking for? I might be able to throw some names in.
Commercial architect.
Well, I think
I think somebody that does. Go ahead, Mike.
Okay, I just want to make sure that the position filled meets the requirements as indicated in the bylaws. That we'll need to maybe follow up with that and see if that fits the bill. And then maybe Senator Otten, I don't know if it was a position that we provide recommendations for, or if we have to send out, if they have to send out public notification for and have it approved by the county manager.
Correct. That's the process. We have to advertise for a period of time and take applications, and then I review them and make a recommendation to the county manager.
Okay. Well, let's after this meeting, we don't have to dwell on it too much today, I wouldn't think, but check the bylaws, make sure that his position would be available for somebody else in the development community from a commercial development standpoint, and an architect might be one for that. And then if that is in fact the case, then we should send through, Sherry, certainly send through any options, and we'll just circulate those names via email.
All right, okay. Sounds great. Thank you.
The clarification on Terry, did we advertise, but Terry didn't have a chance to get his stuff in, and we didn't get any applications? Was that the...
Correct. He expressed his intent to reapply at the last meeting, but we have not received any applications, and it theoretically closed
Tuesday, but we're extending it for a few more weeks.
Did we email him asking and just following up a few times?
Absolutely. That's what I'm going to do.
Okay. Yeah. Because he's
going to text him right now.
He'll probably get around to it.
He might. Yeah. Maybe he's overthinking it in terms of how much he needs to write a letter or something like that. And he can maybe simplify it and make it quick for himself. So.
Or use the same one he used before.
Yeah, there you go.
I think that's what we've all done. Yep.
Well, I mean, I try to tweak mine.
Change the date.
Okay. With that, is there any other member announcements? Eric, did you want to just give a, because I know it's not on the calendar, when the next buildable lands hearing is going to be with the board?
Yeah, it's mid-April. Let me pull up my calendar real quick. It did get continued. We were prepared to testify, and I believe it got moved to April 19th. So what they wanted really was some ground truthing. Unfortunately, it's very difficult for us to provide any ground truthing of the lands that are in the model without at least a screen from the county GIS department. And that's kind of what we responded with. What we were looking to get is kind of land that has not converted in 20 years. And then we can take a look at a few sections of it and give some examples of, you know, why hasn't this converted in a 20 year period? And usually, I mean, I suspect I have some suspicions on why, and there's huge sections that have been in our urban growth boundary for a long time that show in the inventory, but there is no plans at all to ever fund the infrastructure to serve it. So in that case, is it really in the inventory for a 20-year period if the capital facilities plan basically says, you know, we have no intention of building it within 20 years? So what ends up happening is it's development driven entirely, and a development can't support it. So that there's areas like that. There's areas that probably have that are economically feasible due to the size and you know, the improvements that may be required for those projects. Maybe critical areas constrain them. So there's a multitude of reasons why land in the boundary right now may never develop, or it's further out than 20 years. You know, so that's what we were looking for. And we provide a few examples. It's partially captured in the market factor, but the market factor is really more, is it for sale or is it not for sale? Not, is it even feasible to develop? So that's kind of where we're at. The other piece is the multifamily component from the city of Vancouver. We did have some negotiations and some talks with the city of Vancouver on what they were looking to add in. And their position is, we have a lot of available land that is not being incorporated into the current proposal because it is in the downtown core, and it is, you know, residential and commercial areas and mixed use and basically mid-rise apartments. So, you know, from talking to them, kind of had just an epiphany that, you know, we probably do have an excess of that type of land, but that's not our only need. So one of our suggestions was, maybe what we need to do is look at what our needs are for different type of land. We can't lump all the residential land together, because what we end up doing is just going with the easiest one. And the easiest one is, where can we get the most people without adding the boundary or having to build any infrastructure at all? But that doesn't really fulfill the need in the community. So that was one of our comments back as well, is that maybe we need to look at low density residential, rural residential, mid density residential, high density residential, and then a downtown residential. And the other challenge with the downtown residential is normally the construction costs for those mid-rise apartments. You look at the waterfront, the stuff in Uptown Village, all the ones that are really, like, you know, seeing that, the rents on those are really not, they're pretty high. They're not affordable rents. They're not affordable product. So we're not hitting that affordable piece. Where we are kind of hitting it is in kind of suburban garden style apartments, where the rents are kind of they're in that market where a family wage can actually afford those rents, not, you know, a downtown waterfront apartment. So those were basic where we lie on probably the two outstanding issues. So any direction you guys want to provide, if you're supportive of those, you know, I can push it forward, you know, with Dave's consent, but that's kind of the direction we've gone so far in that for the remaining items.
We're getting a someone sent me a link. I didn't open it, but we're getting a buildable lands module or something in GIS. Does anyone know anything about that? So
yeah, I read the article. It didn't explain a whole lot about the details of it. I think it was more that it's going to be more accurate than what they are currently using. I don't know as if it necessarily, and I think what it does, it is it will provide an indication as to whether it's developable, redevelopable, something along those lines. I guess more putting a label on each parcel rather than having to do your own analysis in order to determine whether or not it is any of those.
Gotcha. Okay. I like the idea. I've been, and actually surprised we don't already do it, of splitting out the various residential.
We kind of do it during the comp plan. Okay. But at that time, we've already gone through the vacant buildable lands. And if we show that we have an excess of land, then it's almost too late to go back. So we really need to couple those two processes up front instead of just coming up with, do we have enough land? And that report just said, yes, we do. We have plenty of land, and we actually have an excess of land. What it doesn't say is it doesn't say that we have an excess of a certain type of land, and we have a shortage of other types of land. And that's what it really needs to say to be accurate and provide like good planning guidance moving forward to the comp plan. So
if we had an excess of land right now, people would be crawling all over it and submitting applications.
Yeah, there's anyone out in the field that's in the real estate industry knows there's not an excess of land.
Yeah, I mean,
that's what the report says right now. It says we have plenty of land and plenty of capacity to house our future population. Now,
that reminds me, I saw an interesting statistic last week about growth in the last couple of years around the four county area, and Clark is way off the charts, and you know, even Washington County, which surprisingly does, you know, kind of hold its own, is way down too. And so it's, you can tell a lot of focus has moved north of the river and into Clackamas, is where people are moving to.
In the Clark, you mean?
Into Clark and into Clackamas. Multnomah and Washington are actually seeing sufficient dips, but partly that's because there's no dirt anywhere.
Well, based on those points, Jamie and I have been kind of representing Deeb on that committee. Do any of the points we just brought up, does anyone disagree with them on Deeb, or can we get direction from the board to continue on with the path we're on with our support and testimony?
I think you could pretty much count on a consensus with, unless anybody chimes up, I don't want to speak for everybody, but a consensus from us to continue with that.
Absolutely. And if you need at some point backup help, backup testimony, backup anything, let us know, let me know. I mean, that's... Yep.
Well, you have the hearing date.
I know it's, you know, you guys are kind of hitting your head against the wall. This has been years of discussion.
Going on 2.5 now.
Yeah.
Seems like.
But
yeah.
I mean, the way this market is right now, I mean, it's crazy, but... You would think anything remotely buildable would be called over and being pushed through the process. But
yeah.
Okay. With that, the last member announcement is obviously we got the email that Don Russo has resigned from the Deeb after years of service here. So I did want to dedicate this meeting to Don and thank him for his service to the county over many years, over not only on development engineering, but all the other stuff that he provided to the community. Next on the agenda, I just had a little bit of a placeholder here to tee up the March 31st work session with the council. If there was any other items after we kind of finalized things for Dan and I to know to get prepared before we go talk to them. I'm going to be gone the week before. That's Oregon spring break. So hopefully if anybody's got any comments, they can either give them to me now or sometime an email before then, because I'll probably prepare while I'm away and then come back and do it. Anything? Praise Lord. Okay.
I'll
take silence as
so I think it looks good.
Okay, great. Yeah, again, Dan did the yeoman's task, I think, and did an excellent job with it. Okay, April, I'm going to turn it over to you for the community development updates on the Electronic plan review and where we might be with code updates.
Okay, yep. So we're nearing the end. As you know, I wanted to do some research with some different solutions. So I think that we've narrowed it down. We have to do a couple more demos, but I was really hoping that I would have an answer today who I'm going with, but I think it's probably going to be the end of March. Just know that I am looking at timeline of implementation as one of the factors of who I go with. So yes, so that is still working its way. I'm trying to be as fast as possible, but I also want the best solution for you and for us.
One bit of clarification. Is this upgrades to LMS that you're referring to, or new system, or?
Right. So here's the thing. Yes, we had the budget passed for ePlan to add Computronics. That was the plan. When I was the Department Center Manager, I was pushing forward for that. I really wanted that. I knew that it was a customer, number one customer request. When I got into the director position, I wanted to take a minute and make sure that we were getting the best solution for the price that we were paying for it, because it was a lot. And so I'm so close to finishing that research. We saw Computronics, but we also saw three other solutions as well. One of them being the one that the city of Vancouver uses, which is Project Docs or Evolve. And then code writing. So I told you I'm taking a different direction. I know that in the past, basically one person at the county did most of the biannual code updates. So I am making a committee of people that will look at code and write code after ePlan. It is my second priority. So once I decide what's happening with ePlan, I get to move my attentions to code changes and making sure that we are writing and rewriting code. There are only two more people that I need to tell that they've been voluntold to be on that committee. And then I can move forward with that. So yes, it is after ePlan, it's my second priority. If I get ePlan by the end of March, that will be the dead last date of when I choose which one I'm going with, or we choose, because it's not me choosing. I have a whole committee for that too. Then the code writing committee will start after that. And we will be gathering. I mean, this is going to be huge, by the way. I mean, it's basically 2 years of code writing that we need to do. And I have updates from every department or every program that need to be updated.
Yeah, so April, I was going to ask, is there a way for Deeb to have a liaison with that voluntold committee, I guess?
I don't know. I like the term. Yes, I very nicely invited them, but didn't give them a choice whether they were on it or not. I will have to check to see about the input. I will definitely take your input. And I do know that cottage housing is at the top of your list.
Yeah, I think we've got a laundry list of stuff that's been brought up here. I know that's been put in abeyance, and I know that we have a real strong interest in addressing some of that, and we don't want stuff to slip through the cracks necessarily. And I know staff oftentimes focuses on the Scrivener's error stuff and some more of those policy things we would like to see addressed, because it has been so long.
I'm trying to make a representation from most of each program in the county, and the way I was going to approach it, because I was, what do you see are the issues? Because I know in the permit center, I could tell you what the issues we saw every day that has to deal with the code. So I know every program has that. And I was going to use that as a starting point, because that really is the voice of the customer too. I can tell you my biggest pain point in the permit center was attached ADUs in the rural setting.
Mm. Yeah, we need to make sure too, as we go through and do code changes, it's in the right direction. So some of the recent, you know, as we've seen in the email chain, there's been some recent code interpretations that really are not consistent with previous practice, and they have adverse impacts if they're going to be applied across the board. I mean, we're trying to, as a group and as a community, we're trying to make sure things are easier to build and more affordable. And then when these things come out that make things tougher to build, lower yields, less affordability, less, you know, positive impacts on even the community sometimes, it's not a move in the right direction. So, you know, we typically do a good job of oversight of those, but we also have a few that we could probably contribute. So
I want to just actually be clear about the attached ADU. There isn't anything I can probably do about that right now, just so you know. There are state there are state jurisdictions. I want to make that clear, but that was just an example I was throwing out there. I can't change that one. Just
maybe a definition on what actually is attached. I know there was some questions if they did say a garage, okay, and you have a garage and you want to do an ADU above the garage and you have a breezeway between the home and the garage. And if it's considered a structure, could it be considered attached? And I think there's a leap saying it probably could. And we talked about this when the ADU code was being written, and there was really never any clear guidance there. So it was kind of, what definition are you using? For a fire code, they would consider that attached. And they would be applying, you know, the sprinkler requirements based on that being part of the structure. So now, if you're building a 100-foot breezeway between your ADU and your home, and it's just like a little roof on some piers, that's probably not attached. So, yeah, but some guidance would be nice.
I will make sure that okay. I can. If I can, we will.
Looking around the room, is there anything else for April team? Mike?
As soon as I can get myself unmuted. I think we should gather what we have been looking at and get them to April.
Okay, that's a great idea.
So I'll go, I think, you know, we need to go through back through meeting minutes and such. We have this discussion all the time in our planning meetings at our firm. And I, you know, if we can get together a comprehensive plan, let's work within the DEEB itself, not include, you know, staff or anything on these comments, and then gather something comprehensively and then get them to April. And if you guys want to forward everything to me, I can go ahead and compile all that and get them over.
That would be great. I would love that, especially not having 5,000 emails. That would be it.
Yep, that's the intention.
Thank you.
Because you already get 5,000 emails a day.
Okay, anything else for April here? Well, with that, Mike, take yourself off mute. We're going to move to the Housing Options Subcommittee update.
So, again, I...
And that
I
wasn't know. You. This is going to be Brent, right? Yeah. I forgot.
Well,
Brent.
Not me.
Right. I revised agenda was issued, but actually, I mean, Eric is the chair of the subcommittee or the lead of the subcommittee, so I put his name in there.
Okay. Eric.
Which we are going to yield the time on this subcommittee to the other items that came up recently with the landscape buffers. And the reason for that is that one of our main contributors to that subcommittee was Justin Wood, who was kind of the lead with our efforts on that committee. I'm not on the Housing Options Committee. I was just going to help compile the information from that group. And he is no longer with BIA. He actually moved to a different organization. He's still going to be involved, but he was unavailable to assist with that during that time period. So if we can push that to a later date, we can come up with suggestions on the housing options prior to the adoption. But looks like we have a few other agenda items that'll take the space. So if we can move that to next month.
Okay, I will move that to next month, and hopefully Justin will be able to join us. Okay. So moving to item number 5, this was an item that I added based on some feedback we had gotten from some of our engineering brethren out there in the community regarding the application of L1 landscape standards to various projects out there, and sort of the inconsistency that we're seeing there. And so I wanted to bring this forward to the D members to see how you guys, especially on the civil side, are encountering this. Are you guys encountering this with inconsistency, and sort of some real world examples to illustrate what the issue is so we can work on the solution? And with that, I'll begin with Mr. Odrin. He's got his hand raised first. Lightly.
Yeah. As the resident landscape architect, I've run into this maybe once or a couple dozen times. So the L1 landscape buffer is per the matrix intended to provide buffering really between similar uses based on the zoning designation. Not uses, but the zoning designation, similar zoning designations. And it does talk about where distance is the principal means of separating uses or development. So you're talking about the developments on different properties. And so we're looking at like commercial to commercial, to where it's similar use, it's a similar zone, the impacts associated with the adjacent developments are very similar. And so there's an L1 buffer standard that simply requires trees at 30 feet on center and ground cover, and that's pretty much it. However, it has this other section in here, and it says where the area to be landscaped is less than 10 feet deep, one tree shall be provided per 30 linear, where the area is 10 feet deep or greater, one tree shall be provided per 800 square feet, and either two high shrubs or three low shrubs shall be provided per 400 square feet of landscape area. So that means that so what we do on our plans, and I have a plan here pulled up, and it's a situation where it's a multifamily development, small multifamily development that we've had approved. And this really dovetails well into our other discussion that we were talking about today with regards to outdoor recreational open space areas. What we have shown is that there's a 5-foot landscape buffer per the matrix on a particular project. And then if that 5-foot area is all that's required, some people are interpreting it that, well, if you have more than 5 feet, then all of a sudden this other section kicks in. And I don't know where that comes from, because you're almost being jeopardized, or not jeopardized, but penalized for having a larger landscape area than what is minimally required, which doesn't make sense. Meaning, so if you can allow me to, can I, mind if I share my screen? Can I get control? I don't know where to do that here.
Do you have it on the top right-hand corner?
There you go. I got it. All right. So can everybody see this screen? The site plan? I can't see anybody else, so you have to speak up.
Yes.
Okay. So this is a development that's currently being built. It's a multifamily development. Similar. Sorry about that. That's my dog. And that's the garbage man outside. So along here, you have a 5-foot landscape buffer along this section of the development. And if you go to the landscape plan portion of it, we have provided what is minimally required in here, the trees spaced at 30 feet on center. Now, as you know, trying to create a nice development, I have certainly placed other plantings around the building, foundation plantings. This is going to be someplace where people are going to live. We've met the, we'll stick with that right now. But then it came up that there are other, and then of course we have the L2 buffer that's along the roadway here, and we've screened the parking along here. And then we have another L1 buffer. Let me see here. I got to zoom in a little bit. Oh, an L3 buffer along the south property line, but we've provided a fence along there. So when this particular project was being reviewed, I did not propose any trees in this particular area. And the reason why was that we wanted it to remain open. We've met all of the pertinent code requirements. We've provided over and above what would be minimally required as far as all landscaping on the project. We've provided a nice development per the developer's wishes, but nothing over and above that, you know, they're spending extra money on where they don't need to. Well, one of the comments that came through on the review of this was that, and I have staff reports and stuff, and I won't bore you with all of that, but that this area right here did not meet the L1 standard because it didn't have any trees in it. And this is not the first time that this has come up. So the buffer standards are meant to buffer between uses, other properties around the area. This is clearly interior to the project and doesn't buffer anything from anything offsite as far as what would typically be required. So I've had this discussion with this particular planner before. We knew that it wasn't going to go anywhere. And so I capitulated, as I believe Andrew mentioned that he's done, is just to keep the project moving, not to create waves. We went ahead and added the trees per that person's interpretation of this code, and we were approved. This has been something that has never come up with any other review by any other particular planner. Meaning, and here's where it really gets interesting, is what if we wanted a large lawn area without any trees or shrubs for a play field? What if it was a ball field? What if it's a school? What if it's something along those lines? Is that then not meeting the L1 standard because it doesn't have the one tree per 800 square feet and two high shrubs or three low shrubs per 400 square feet of landscaped area? So this has come up only on the projects that's being reviewed by this particular planner. I do have examples. I won't pull them up today, but should staff want to see those examples and clearly identified on those plans where the L1 buffer standard is not being met per one planner's interpretation of it, I can certainly do that, as well as the conditions of approval from that particular planner indicating where it's not being per that planner's interpretation, not being met on a particular project. So this is really what it comes down to, is they are what this person has said is that it says the intent, the L1 standard is for open areas. It is intended to be used where distance is a principal means of separating uses or development, and landscaping enhances the area between them. Again, this isn't between any development, but they are saying that the standard is for open areas. So if there's any open areas, this person has interpreted it as meaning we have to have the shrubs and the trees. Again, just want to reiterate, this has not been uniformly interpreted. And on other projects I could show you, I don't have them up right now. This, for example, this area would have remained open. No trees in that area. It's the north side of the building. There's really no shading that needs to be done. These are three-story walk-up apartment buildings. And we wanted to maintain that open space area for things such as Frisbee and other more passive recreational activities, sunbathing, whatever it might be. So that's really kind of the gist of what we've run across. And I'll go ahead and, if I can figure out how to do it, stop sharing, and maybe Andrew can chime in, or Eric, as far as what they have seen as far as their experiences.
Yeah, I've run into this just a couple of times pretty recently. I ran into it on an industrial site where we had very little landscaping, frankly. It was kind of a typical well-utilized economic development. And so we were asked to basically provide the L1 standard in terms of shrubs throughout the property. On that site, we had a few parking islands, and it wasn't a huge difference to us whether we look at grass in the landscape island or a few shrubs. And so we proceeded in that direction to keep things moving, like Mike said. And I guess what I would say, when I look through this section of code and I read the L1, the L2, the L3, the L4, and the L5 buffers, it's eminently obvious that these standards are intended to be about perimeter buffering. They're not about the rest of the site. You look at the L2, there's nothing about square footage coverage. You get into some shrub screening, but it's clearly about perimeter treatment. There's places where you can utilize fencing in place of a landscape buffer to replace the screening requirements. And so it's just really 100% obvious to me that this is about perimeter screening when we talk about shrubs, trees, and that type of planting. And so I firmly agree it's just being misapplied if you're trying to apply this requirement to the interior of a site. And you can figure that out by thinking about those other types of perimeter buffering standards. And so would we put a fence in the middle of the site to accomplish screening? It's pretty much the same thing. It's a different landscape standard, but it's just, in my opinion, it's just being misapplied. And we've kind of lived with it a couple times because it wasn't a big deal, but there are situations like where you're trying to provide some alternate, active use of some of your landscape areas where, you guys are crushing the ability to accomplish those other goals that are really important for some uses. So that's all I have.
So I do have an example up of another landscape plan that was approved by another planner. And so I'll go ahead and share my screen again, just to give you an example. So if you look at this plan, you see this lawn area out here. I did plant some trees and some shrubs to some trees in this area to provide for some shade. But this area in here, I mean, you're looking at distance, and this has been, there's a lot of distance. This is currently developed here. There's a lot of existing vegetation in here. And then this is all non-developed, and there weren't buffers required on either side here, except as what we're showing. But this area in here, interior to the site, would, I believe, not have met the standards that we would have been required to have added more shrubs in this area to have met that standard, should it have been reviewed by somebody else.
I agree with Mike and Andrew 100%. I've been working in the county for over 25 years, and this has just come up now. I have never seen this applied in that way. Buffers and screening as an industry standard are on the perimeter between uses. They're not for internal landscaping. It almost sounds like what they're trying to do is create like a tree code like the city of Vancouver has, where you have to have a certain number of tree units. Now, if they want to do that, that's a different code section. That's something completely different. And then you have location. You're not putting it in any open space area. This really doesn't make sense. And there's three items. It was in the last one I sent that was related to this. One was, any recreation area has to be the 10-foot. And then you can't count any recreation area in your landscaped areas. That again, is inconsistent with industry standard. It's inconsistent with past practice. and have never seen it before. And it can have an adverse impact on the yield and housing affordability. It's just, I'm not sure where this is coming from and why the interpretation was made. So maybe, I don't know who on the county staff side can address it and maybe give us some background on why they felt this was the appropriate way to...
Before you do that, that's...
Ted is here.
Excellent segue. I want to go back now to the site plan from what I had shown previously. So this is the site plan. Whoops. I just clicked off the whole thing. Hang on.
Go Cougs.
Yep, I was waiting for that.
Hey, boo! No!
Stop it. Okay, I'm going to quit sharing for a second until I can get that back up. Hey, who is booing? Was that you, Jamie?
I have my duck shirt on, man.
Oh, it looks like...
What have the Cougs ever done to anybody, though?
Right. Thank you. I need
Jamie,
to log back on.
I'm right there with you. Go Ducks.
So, this will take me just a sec. I just got kicked out of my work computer, so I need to pull this back up. Hopefully we didn't lose power at work, which is usually what happens. Okay, we're back up and rolling. So I will share this again. There we go. So on this project, we also had to provide the outdoor recreational area requirements. So we have over here our calculations of landscape area, in order to meet the minimum requirements. This line right here shows the outdoor recreational requirement or outdoor shared outdoor recreational area. We have the private recreational areas afforded by the little hatched patios here. Landscape plan shows that those are screened so that people that are using these areas around it, again, now I'll hop back to the landscape plan. And you can see that there's lawn areas, usable areas all the way along here. There'll be some like arborvitae or something providing screening in for those areas. We've got some play area in here. We've got some outdoor fitness areas here. We've got a dog run here, and we've got some large open space areas for passive or active recreational. But this area here, everything that's in here, as far as the soft landscape area, which is primarily what we'll use for a calculation, and if we don't meet the minimum requirements per the zone, we'll start taking a look at those hardscape areas that might be over and above what's minimally required, meaning this play area here, the fitness area, and dog park, and things of that nature. But this whole area, all of the landscape within that outdoor recreational area, has been counted towards meeting the overall landscape requirements of the entire site, just as the landscape buffers have, but that's a different code section also. The parking lot landscape requirements are included in the overall landscape calculation, but that's a different code section. The screening of the parking lot is calculated in the overall landscape calculation, but that's a separate code section. But all of these together combine to create the entire landscape for the site. So why are we being penalized from a development standpoint by now having to add additional landscape area over and above what's minimally required? Now, I realize that I'm gonna stop sharing here. I realized with Ted's email earlier today back to Deeb that stated that it could be a number of different things. It could be interior or exterior. I worked on a project where they had a roof deck. So that wouldn't be counted as in the landscape calculation specifically. But if it is a landscape area, and I'm speaking soft landscape areas right now, meaning trees, shrubs, ground cover, whatever, that now that can't be calculated in the overall landscape area. And we find that it's not consistent with other practices and how it's being interpreted overall. So that's where we're looking for staff to say, hey, what happened? I could have counted the dog park. I could have counted the fitness area. I could have counted the playground area in my landscape area calculation if I'd wanted to, because code allows that, because it's over and above what's minimally required for pedestrian access between uses on site, pedestrian access to the rights of way. So that's kind of, we're just, I think all of us that have been on here are just kind of scratching our heads and trying to figure out what's going on. So that's all I'll have to say about that for right now.
Okay. Well, so Seth, Jeff, Terry, you guys have any comments? Eric, any further ones?
I mean, I've commented and I put it in that email as well that I think everybody got. I mean, I don't believe, and actually, I don't believe it has not been interpreted that way in the time I've been practicing in Clark County, which is about, 25 years or so. And I'm not sure where that came from. And it doesn't really even make sense with the intent of these codes. We've been through these codes and rewritten them and have worked on this, different variations and understanding. And it doesn't meet the intent of the codes. They're for different reasons. They're not, exclusive. They can serve multiple purposes. They're intended to serve multiple purposes. And I think Mike did a really good job of explaining that with some of the other examples, like the perimeter buffers, the landscape islands, recreational areas. They're all part of landscaping. And typically landscaping is pretty much anything that is not a parking lot, hard surface, or a building. Even things like hardscape, like patios, things like that, that's considered part of the landscaping, which can also be recreation. You have to meet all of these requirements, but they don't take away from the other ones. If you did that, you'd end up with a site that probably has very little land left for a building if you subtracted all of those things out. Mike did a good job. I'm really curious to see what the history was on this and what staff's thoughts are, and where we go from here. And I guess one other thing that I would like to bring up in the future is this has happened on a few items now. And before these policies are changed or interpretations are made, it would be great to get some input from, say, this board. That's why we're here. So when staff does these things in a vacuum, without support, a lot of times we can avoid all this by simply having a discussion on it before it goes out and ends up, impacting projects. So it can come from you guys too. We're here for you as well. We can give history on projects. A lot of us have been doing this and have a lot of history on where these codes have come from and what they're intended to do. So,
and I bet you that we have over 150 years of combined experience in Clark County, direct experience working in Clark County on a variety of different projects. And when we see something like this come up, and relatively relative short past, that it starts raising red flags for us as far as we thought we had everything arranged. We thought we were good to go. We thought everybody was on the same page. And that's what we're looking at is consistency of review, consistency of interpretation. And that we know that not every situation is the same. And sometimes that requires a little bit of, hey, I got to get back to, I got to check this out with the others, see what they think about it. Most of the time, especially if we are able to provide reasonable justification for what we're trying to accomplish, it usually works out to everyone's benefit. We also want to reiterate that we're not trying to skirt the code, get away with anything. We shouldn't be. We're all professionals. And while we are while we'll represent our clients all the time, if something comes up like this, we will certainly want to discuss it sometimes vehemently in what we feel is the correct interpretation. And absent anything directly from code, from staff, to the contrary, it should continue to be the way it always has been.
And I guess from AKS's part, I haven't had it come up specifically on one of my projects where it's caused an impact. However, one of the things that I noticed looking at that table within the landscape code, as far as the buffers go, it's either the L1 is used in situations where it's either a 5-foot L1 or a 10-foot L1. And I wonder if that may be even where that reference to square footage comes from, where it says 10 feet or greater, and that it's based on a square footage in that case, because of the additional distance that it's set back, that then the landscaping is varied.
And that's a good point, Seth, but it's still the perimeter landscaping, not attached to interior landscaping. So that's a good point.
100%.
So on this issue, I guess, obviously the county staff is here. I'm sure they're taking notes on this. What would be our pleasure here? Obviously we're raising this as an issue. It sort of came in last minute, so they're not going to have, I'm going to be a little bit deferential that they're not going to maybe have an immediate response, but is this something that we want to put back on the agenda for next month and have that dialogue directly with community development?
I would recommend that we set aside some time for staff to convene, review, take a look at past practices, and kind of digest what we've discussed today, allow them to maybe reach out to us should they have additional questions, so that we can continue a dialogue throughout the next month and maybe have them come back next month if that works for April and Ted, and then we can hopefully put this to bed.
Okay, and then I do want to pivot. Eric did raise another one that came up that's sort of tangentially related. And I would, I guess, add that as item with chair's prerogative here, item number 6. I'll bump public comment down to item 7. So, Eric, do you want to tee off on this one?
Yeah, and we actually already covered it because it's very related. So one of the items was the L1 in open spaces. Another one was the not counting any of the landscaped area is recreation space that you couldn't, you know, it couldn't be in that landscaped area. Mike covered that pretty well. Another one was something that came up in cottage code, which required like any usable open space for the cottages to be 10 foot. And now that's being applied to any open space that's used in multifamily, which again, not that it's not a bad idea to have something like that, but it's not in the code, and that's not where that wasn't the intent, and it hasn't been applied that way in the past. So they're kind of related, and I think, you know, it would be nice to hear from Ted a little bit if he is the representative from staff, and maybe kind of just some history on what their process is on these interpretations and how it came up, what their point is, because they've had a pretty good job of hearing, you know, our side. And one great thing about this board is it's allowed all of us on both sides to hear the other perspective. And maybe there's some great intention here. Maybe it's just not being applied the correct way. And maybe this is something that we could say, if the county is concerned about a certain piece, we could help find a way to get that in code that actually it meets the intent without all the adverse impacts. And you don't always see that big picture when you're looking at one piece. So, you know, we are on the same team. We just want to make sure it's applied correctly and with the right intent. So I would like to hear from Ted. And we have projects that are, you know, waiting for a staff report and a decision. And I really would hate to delay those things if it's something we could wrap up quickly. You know, we don't always need to, you know, delay things and have additional committee meetings for simple issues like this. So maybe we can hear from staff.
Hi, this is Ted. Let me see if I can get the camera to work on my phone. Can you see me okay? And you can hear me? Okay.
Yep.
So I'm, you know, I'm still wrapping my head around the applicability on the L1 and the landscape standards. That's something that I will have to do some research on and probably get back to you as, and I'm not sure I'm grasping what the issues are with the cottage development yet. So that's again something, and I can certainly talk to any of you offline anytime, you know, if somebody has questions or issues with how we're applying the code. I encourage you to contact me. I can do a Teams meeting or any kind of meeting with one or more of you to talk about this stuff. You know, as for the on the L1 applicability, I know those landscape standards are for buffering and for general landscaping and buffering. So you know, we probably do have some interpretation there from the staff that we need to take a look at again. I'm still wrapping my head around that applicability, and I need to do some more research on that and how that's applied. So I do need to learn more about what your concerns are with the cottage developments as well. As for the recreational space, which came up, just a little, excuse me, a little background on that. That came up in one of our team meetings, and we had an application. Excuse me, I have a cough today. But we had a team meeting. We had an application come forward, and the question came up about recreational space counting towards the required landscaping, and we had some pretty robust discussion back and forth, and I will admit that the applicability of this section of code has not been altogether consistent in the past. We do have we do have planners that have applied the recreational space this way and some not. I was given a few staff reports that showed where it was applied this way, as a team, we went back and read through the code and read through the section. I went back and did some research on this. You know, in reading the recreational space specifically for multifamily and what it was used for, it did read as a completely separate section to me, as a completely separate applicability to me, just on the surface. You know, is it being an indoor gym or a pool or a tennis court or something like that? You know, it just read like it's something separate from the required landscaping on the site. In doing some more research, I'll share my screen, I think, if I can. There is a section, and this section of code for recreational space does fall under our special uses section in the code. Let me just see if I can share my screen and bring this up. Let's see. My screen isn't. All right, sorry about that. One second. Can you see this?
Yes.
Okay. So special uses and standards, this is where that section of recreational space falls for multifamily uses. And the first part of this section, as you can see right here, it says, in addition to other standards and requirements imposed by this title, all uses included in this chapter shall comply with the provisions stated herein. So when we're trying to determine if this is something that is standalone or not, you know, or can be kind of crossed over with other sections of the code, The special uses section of the code is quite clear as it opens up. The first sentence in that special uses section of code says this is in addition to other requirements of the title. And so when this question came up and we're looking through the code and we're looking to see how this is applied, that right there seemed black and white to me. And I was like, well, that it says right there that this is separate. That's how I read that. In addition to other sections of the code. So that's how we looked at this and determined that this is a separate part. This is in addition to other requirements of the code. So that's how we got here on this one. I mean, we talk about code changes, you know, and maybe something needs to be changed if all parties agree that this is not a reasonable, application. But it certainly seems clear that as a special use, it is in addition to other provisions of the title. So I just wanted to bring that part up and to you guys and kind of show you that and let you know that's kind of where we came from on this. It seemed reasonable in looking at it that, you know, you these are for higher density multifamily projects, right? So you have kind of a communal property of people living in tight quarters together. So the code explicitly stating that maybe you need a separate space for this community for active recreation. In that definition, it includes, you know, swimming pools. It can be indoor or outdoor. So it kind of through the definition and through the list of uses sort of separates it from the general standard required landscaping. You know, so it seemed, in our interpretation, and I'll tell you that the planners, we did have a very robust discussion on this. But in reviewing this language and reviewing the code a bit more, we all kind of concurred that that's essentially what it says. So obviously would love to hear a discussion on that. And again, on the L1 standards and the cottage, I'd like more information on that. And maybe I can talk offline to Mike or a couple of you and kind of get some more details on that. And I can look into that a little bit more.
Okay. So one quick thing, in addition doesn't mean exclusive. Here's an example. A road is a utility core in addition to being a travel way. Every code section is in addition to other code sections. They don't mean they're exclusive. They mean they're in addition to. That means you have to make sure that not only do you have to make sure you have enough landscaping, so that's a different code section that you can meet independently. And then you also need to meet these other code sections. It doesn't mean that it doesn't say in that code that the area that is used to meet landscaping cannot also be used for this. It's the code is in addition to, not the area is in addition to. So I do think that's a misinterpretation. This has been interpreted the same way without a change since I can remember, so since 25 years. This is a significant change in an interpretation. And I think it's basically because the county maybe has a lot of new people, a lot of people that haven't been using this code for a long time. And sometimes things get lost in translation, the intent. Code's kind of funny. You could almost read it multiple ways sometimes, but that's not what the intent is, and that's not how it's been applied, and that hasn't been the practice and the policy. So I can tell you with 100% certainty, it is not meant to be exclusive. It has always been, you have to meet the landscape percentage, and then you also have to meet the recreational percentage. Those areas can overlap. They can serve both purposes. One means something different than the other. So it's not that the areas need to be in addition to, and it doesn't say that. It says the standard is an addition. And I think that maybe is something that was missed when staff went through it, because this is something new. Never seen it before. Other agencies don't do it this way. Other jurisdictions, I've never seen another jurisdiction interpret it this way. So, I mean, not that it wasn't in good intent. I just don't think that maybe the experience was there and the interpretation is correct, and it, we probably could have you know, benefited from a discussion with stakeholders before a decision like this was made. So, you know, that's, I guess that's our position, and I guess I would respectfully ask that you guys reconsider and maybe even talk to a few other planners that use this code all the time, that have some significant experience with it, and come up with something that, that is consistent. Because I can say the planners have been inconsistently using it. They have been consistently applying this over the last 20 some years. The only time this has come up is just recently. And now you have a few new people that have not necessarily used this code for a long time, and maybe they did interpret it inconsistent with past practice, but we shouldn't move the entire code to that inconsistent. We should make sure it's the correct interpretation that meets the intent.
And we shouldn't move the code to something that's more restrictive than what has already been interpreted.
Correct. And anything that you guys think might be more restrictive, I think you should run it through Deeb. That's why this board is here. It's actually meant to help staff as well, and to prevent things like this from coming up and becoming something that it is, you know, controversial or, you know. So we are here to do exactly that.
Yeah, and that's great. And I appreciate you being there for us to kind of bounce stuff on or off of. But I don't know that I agree with some of what you say. I don't agree that just because something's been done a certain way that it's been done the right way. I don't necessarily agree with that. You know, there's staff may be interpreting or something, and I know this hasn't been consistently interpreted. Maybe it's been interpreted or applied this way mostly, but I've got staff reports that apply it a different way. I have those staff reports, and so that were shown to me. So I know it's been applied this way with some of you. I have those reports. And so what I guess, you know, that's always good to relook at the code and make sure it is being applied correctly and as the code is intending for it to be, you know, as it was intended to be applied. So I don't, you know, I'm not saying that you're wrong. I'm not saying I'm wrong. I'm just saying that I think it's okay to relook at the way something is being applied in the code. I'm new to this code, but I'm not new to code. I've worked with a lot of different codes, a lot of different agencies. All right. I've interpreted code. I've run through this issue before where you have staff that has always interpreted code different ways. Developers always, you know, come at us with this kind of response too. And it's fair because as a developer, you want consistency. That's completely understandable. It's my job as the planning manager to make sure that that consistency is applied in the code. So coming in and reviewing the code, making sure it makes sense, working with the planners and making sure they're all applying the code of the same way. We do this with our staff meetings every single week. We bring up sections of the code and we talk about inconsistency and how that section of the code is being applied and trying to fix that, because it's not fair to the development community that something is not being applied consistently. And this staff, you know, I'm brand new to the county, but my staff is not. My staff has been here for a long time. And this is the staff that I meet with every week. This is the staff that I talk about this stuff with. And I take their input very seriously because they have been, you know, applying this and having to interpret the code, going through code changes and working with your community, the community of developers for a long time. So this isn't, I guess it's, you know, I agree with you that a change like this, we bringing it to Deeb and talking about it first, that's probably something that's due diligence. But we get this daily, right? We get this all the time. We get applications flying in at us. We have a ton of applications. We're having to read through them. We're having to look at them and apply the code to all these different applications. And so when we have our meetings, we have constantly have these kind of issues come up and we're having to make these kind of decisions sort of on the fly because as you said, a development is coming through, right? It's coming through. They want an answer. We need to be able to provide them an answer. And I get, like I said, I get that maybe you're used to a certain way something's been applied, but that doesn't mean it can't be re-looked at. You know, when I look at this section, what I just showed you, to me, that says this is separate. This is in addition to the other standards. That's how I read it, and that's how I interpret that. You know, this particular issue isn't something I'm, you know, really going to fall on my sword over. So I am willing to I'm open to looking at this and questioning how we're looking at it. You know, we do have managers meetings every week, so it is something that we can talk to our management about as well, and see, does this make sense? Are we looking at this correctly? You know, so I want to be reasonable with our approach to the code, of course, but also make sure we're applying the code correctly.
So, Ted, to what you just said, what is the downside to using the landscape area that we already have to meet this section? I'm having trouble trying to understand why it is that you're latching on to this in addition to other standards and requirements, which I'm fully on board with Eric that it's an additional standard, but that doesn't mean that you can't use one standard to meet another and kind of do double duty. But what's the downside to all this? I know what the downside for us would be, for your interpretation to have it be exclusive would be, you end up with, might not end up with projects at all if you suddenly have to double the landscape area that you need to have in order to meet this requirement, because it's in addition to that requirement. So, I'd like you to consider that as you discuss it. I know that, Travis has his hand up, so I'll.
Yeah. Yeah. So, hey, you know, let me, since the chair's prerogative here, I know since Travis is one of the people that brought this issue to me, I'm going to allow him to comment on here. So, Travis.
I think the landscape code, you guys have, you know, my opinion is that those have always been buffers, L1 buffer, L2, L3, 4, 5. They've always been applied that way. But I haven't heard about this active use thing. I think the challenge with that is in the city, there is no active use space requirements in high density residential. So R30 zone, you can get your 1.8 to 2 parking spaces per unit, maximize the density to R30, and you end up with a little bit of open space left. We can't design to 1.5 parking spaces in the county. It's too difficult. We get too much overflow parking into other neighborhoods. So if this is a change that's going to occur in the county, I don't see how we're going to get to the R30 density with 3-story apartments, which is the only thing that can be efficiently developed in the county, still meet the active space and still meet the open space and landscape requirements and still get the 1.8 to 2 parking spaces per unit. It's physically impossible. So we're either going to have to make it a code change or do something different. That's the only thing I see moving forward.
I think to Mike's question, the downside, I guess I'm trying to figure out the intent of that section, and I think, you know, what the, I guess the downside to not applying it that way would be that, you know, you don't want landscaping, you know, you don't want the recreational open space to just count as all of your landscaping per se, right? So you have a large recreational open space, you know, say a soccer field or something, how does that apply to your landscaping?
You still have screenings, right. You still have other pieces that also, in addition, need to be met. So you still have to make sure you meet your screening requirements and your buffer requirements. You have to make sure you meet your street tree requirements. You have to make sure you meet your recreation requirements, your percent landscape requirements. All of these pieces need to also be met. Now, if you will still have to do your buffer requirements, even if you put in a huge soccer field and the entire thing is landscaped. You still need to meet those other requirements. And that's what this means. So, all requirements are in addition. One requirement doesn't mean you don't have to meet another requirement. Now, it's a difference in term between areas. It does not say anywhere in the code that the area used for recreation cannot be part of the landscaped area. Area is different. A requirement, you always have to meet every requirement that's in the code or address why you're not meeting it. So this the term, in addition to other standards and requirements imposed in the title, you have to meet this one. That goes without saying almost. Almost every code section you're probably going to look at has that language in it, because you can't choose, hey, I'm going to meet one code requirement and not another code requirement. They all apply to projects when they're triggered. It doesn't mean the areas like your that has been interpreted. So I guess in the essence of time, I guess maybe we could make a motion to request to the board that this new more restrictive interpretation is not applied until it's been fully vetted by staff and DEEB and maybe the board until it has been vetted, and it should be put on hold because it is more restrictive. You are seeing, I think, from several members of the community that this isn't consistent with past practice, even though maybe one of your staff members or a few of your staff members have interpreted it that way. That hasn't been the long-term direction and application of this code in the past. So I don't know if it's something we could do. Could we entertain a motion?
All right. Well, Eric, I'll take the motion, but I do see Andrew's got his hand up. Okay, I do want to get to him before I take a second. So, Andrew. Sure.
Yeah, I just have one thing to add, I guess, when I look at this, looking at the code, you know, Ted, you're leaning on this in addition to statement in 40.260, the overriding section of all special use and standards within the county. First, probably six times so far you've said separate to and in addition to, and that's what you're applying. And it doesn't say separate to and in addition to, it just says in addition to. So you're adding words to the code that don't exist. And then secondarily, that statement, in addition to other standards, it's talking about accessory buildings, coffee stands, agricultural stands, ambulance dispatch facilities, marijuana, opiates, home businesses, temporary workers. This is not about landscaping. This specific language is about 25, 35 different special uses within the county. And it's you're wanting to apply it to one single situation of 35 different types of uses. So I see it just like Eric does. It's just a lot of, you're adding your own words and applying it to one of 35 uses. And yeah, bed and breakfast has its own set of standards. And it also has to live with the overriding zoning. So I just don't see it. I'm all in favor with the motion.
Is that a second?
I'll make that a second.
Okay, good. Discussion, anybody? Mike? Jeff, Seth, we got your hand up. Seth,
that sounds odd, man.
Yeah, one of the things that I guess that comes to me is, you know, the city of Vancouver's requirement was referenced, and their open space requirement is only, or their landscape requirement is only 10%. You know, so that there, you know, implies that even 10% of that site still provides, you know, opportunities for the residents. There isn't additional requirements for recreation. standards like the county has. So I think by showing, you know, if you're doing 20%, and in addition, the outdoor recreation area, that's going way above and beyond other jurisdictions' requirements in the area.
Okay. Jeff, any thoughts? Gary, any thoughts before I call the question? Okay.
No.
So there's a motion on the table. Oh, go ahead, Jeff.
No, I was just gonna say I think we've covered everything more than once, actually, the concerns very thoroughly. So good to go.
Okay.
Jamie, can I say something? I just want to say, sure. I don't think that Ted was saying separate was in the code. I just think that he was saying that because it says in addition to, he was looking at it separately, just to, that's how I heard him, just to clarify.
Okay.
Okay. Well, we have a motion on the table basically asking to have this be put in abeyance until further discussion can be had, and I think likely return next month as an agenda item. So with that, all those D members, somebody's sharing the screen, so everybody's like a little box to me.
Oh, yeah. Ted, can you click off?
Ted, can you stop sharing?
Sorry about that.
Should be about stop share. Yeah.
Okay.
There we go.
So just to clarify, the motion is that to recommend to the board, since we're an advisory to the board, that they do not apply this new interpretation that is more restrictive than past practice until it's fully vetted by Deeb and staff and it come to an agreement.
So okay. That's captured. So all those members in favor say aye and raise your hands so I can see you guys.
Aye.
Okay. That's unanimous. Let's put it. Okay.
Thank you, staff.
Thank you, staff. And thanks everybody for the thoughtful comments. And Mike, especially thank you for bringing in those real world examples. I think it was really helpful to have a visual there.
And I have more for future discussion if necessary.
Okay, thank you. Brent, you're on mute.
Yeah, I just had a question procedurally about how you're gonna get this communicated to the board. There is a form I'm supposed to complete when you guys pass a motion and forward to the board. I don't know if there's any additional steps you feel we need to
typically take. Typically in the past, Greg has sort of crafted an email, and I guess you can send it around to the group just to confirm before it gets submitted. But typically, that's what he did in the past.
Okay.
Just a summary of the discussion and the motion and the vote. Summary of the discussion, then the motion, and then the vote.
All right, I should have something for you guys to look at sometime midday tomorrow.
Okay. Even though we're an advisory board to the council, typically, you know, staff, as just a professional courtesy, if there's something controversial like that, they would, you know, take the advice as well and kind of push it off until we can fully vet it. So.
All right.
Okay. With that, we're coming to the last item on the agenda for this month, which is public comment. I think a lot of the people that were here from the public have dropped off. But to that extent, is there anybody still on from the public that wants to comment, please raise your hand. Okay, seeing none. Again, we have the work session with the County Council on March 31st. If anybody's got any comments with the work plan leading up to that, please try to get it to me in the next 2 weeks, as I will be gone that week of the 20th, the week before. And then the next meeting will be April 14th because of Washington spring break. So, and with that, I guess we're adjourned for this month. Thank you, everybody.
Hey, Jerry. I was going to mention. I just going to mention something really quick. I don't know if appropriate or inappropriate because I don't know if it's been announced yet. But Ali, I heard, are you retiring? Or has that been announced, or is that something I shouldn't be?
Yes, sir. All right. Congratulations to you and everyone else that won't have to deal with me after.
I couldn't hear that. What did you say?
For celebration.
He said congratulations to you and everybody else that doesn't have to deal with him anymore.
Oh, no.
So it is. I mean, no. I don't know.
We like Ollie.
I just figured if I'm hearing it, it's got to be, you know. Maybe it's not official though, but those would be big shoot. You, there's a lot of things that go through you, Ollie. So,
yeah, I appreciate it. Jennifer is doing my work right now as an interim, and I'm interim for Greg's position for the time being. But I will need to sign off at the end of April. And it's been a pleasure knowing you. I mean, aside the joke, you know, and, you know, making fun of it. You know, we've had good times and I've been, you know, make you maybe lose a few leg of hairs and, you know, turn it white a little bit. But it's all been, you know, on behalf of the people of Clark County. I have no, you know, personal agenda. I've always tried to do the best I can for the residents of the county, just to make sure, because, you know, as a homeowner, I hate to see a development come to my neighborhood and ruin it stormwater-wise, traffic-wise, safety issues. So I've always tried to apply the code as written and never, you know, injected my own personal beliefs, which could, you know, be somewhat different. So I appreciate it. And I'd be most likely on vacation the first week of April. It's a spring break in Vancouver. So most likely I won't be at the next one, but I hope to see you around. You know, I will still be, you know, living in the county and, you know, maybe we run into each other somewhere, someplace. But it's been a pleasure.
Oh, I'm glad I brought it up, because that's true. You did. You won't be making our next Eve meeting.
Well, so. The next one's on the 14th, so maybe he will.
Oh, okay. So I will be there.
Oh, okay. Good.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, Ali. We expect you to be here, and we'll dedicate the next. This one was Russo's, but you get the next one, bud.
Yeah,
I appreciate it.
Thank you.
We'll have a chance. We'll have a chance to get our jokes ready for the roast.
That sounds good. Maybe I'll have a few myself.
There you go.
I think you approach things the way you said, and very much appreciate all you've done. The retiring bug seems to be going crazy these days.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't know what the rest of us are doing wrong, but. Good for you.
Yeah, you're still too young. That's what.
Well, good for you. I hope I didn't raise something that was a secret. I just figured it would be most of the people on D would be interested to know that if they didn't know.
Yeah. Actually, I've been dragging my feet, you know, trying to help out as much as I can. And I told April, you know, I don't have a major, you know, deadline if I'm needed. But again, I believe that there will be, you know, staff that will handle everything, you know, hopefully. One of the things has been like, you know, lack of resources and staffing, and everybody's really busy. But again, you know, there is a time that, you know, you feel like, you know, people are going to be able to carry on. As you all know, one of our, you know, pride has been delivery on time. You know, we have an extremely good record. I'm talking about development engineering of delivering 21-14-7. for final reviews. Of course, the land use runs with the land use, and there are a whole bunch of other people involved, and we have a legal timeline for that. But for final engineering, we've been trying to deliver, and I hope that's the case in the future. April will make sure that that will happen.
You bet.
I tried to tell him he couldn't retire this year, but he did stay. I mean, he said he was flexible, but I don't think he was that flexible. So.
Well, good try, April. I like that. Anyway, well.
Okay. Well, appreciate everybody's time. Come with your engineering jokes in hand and all the offers.
Oh, I've already got one ready.
No,
it's not towards you directly. It's towards all engineers, so it'll go over real well here.
Okay, sounds good.
We could go after lawyers. That'll be fun when Jamie.
Crazy Mark.
He'd probably sue us.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you.
But
thanks, guys.
Good evening.
See you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.